wants to warm up. Let's warm up.
Good day, people of the world. This is Liberty Southwest, podcast number 47. Today is March 4th, 2015. Today we are talking about ISIS for a second time and the current involvement in the Middle East. We'll discuss the organization's background and what the last 6 months have looked like. Today we are joined with Danny Ning and Eric Taylor and myself, Kirk Pettis. You want to take it away, Eric?
Sure. So, this is the second time we've talked about ISIS. I think back in September, we kind of went over formation of organization, you know, where they came from, what they're doing, you know, how they're expanding throughout Iraq into Syria, and, you know, what's going on there. And I think last week, Danny, you mentioned it would be a good topic to discuss, correct?
Yeah, I agree, because it's been a while since we discussed anything that's kind of like hot topic button issues. So I thought, you know, it'd be kind of good to get back into ISIS and, you know, talk about, you know, fear a little bit. I like fear.
Do you like to be scared, or do you like to make people scared?
I kind of like both. That's why I like porn.
Fear porn, Danny.
I don't go that far. That's a little.
That's one of my favorite words, fear porn.
I've never really heard that term before, Kirk.
You haven't?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Oh, Kirk, man. Of course, that's... Kirk would know.
All media propaganda is pure fear porn.
Oh, I thought it was like a genre of porn or something.
Oh, no.
That's what I thought, too.
Like, never heard of this before. What's going on?
Oh, you know, a little Faces of Death, 1, 2, 3, I don't know. I'm kidding.
Yeah. So that's how you it's your personal term, Kirk? For just typical news, the propaganda out there, fear porn.
Oh, it's disgusting.
So, yeah. So, what specifically, Danny? Were you thinking about? I mean, there's been, you know, ISIS has been growing in the area, right? I mean, you see attacks throughout Europe that are attributed to ISIS or Al Qaeda, or, you know, they're kind of interwoven together. It seems like, you know, for all practical purposes, ISIS is the new terrorist boogeyman, right? And it's just kind of popped up within the last year or so.
Right. I mean, it's just, yeah, it just came out of nowhere. And, you know, it just kind of, the reason why I brought up this topic up was, you know, just kind of curious exactly. Like, you know, I think they started in 2006 or something with, like, just getting nowhere, and then just within a year, they just kind of boomed out of nowhere. So, you know, it was just kind of interesting all of a sudden how that happened, and now you hear them all over the news about beheading people and, you know, just causing wreck havoc across the world. And, you know, what's always been interesting in my mind is why are they targeting, you know, Christians and killing them specifically. If you don't proclaim, if you're proclaiming with, you know, Christianity, I'm gonna kill you, you know. So it just kind of got me interested in, you know, why I wanted to talk about this again. So.
Well, and there's the new war powers that President Obama is asking for. Kind of makes a lot of a current event.
Yeah, and that's, so he asked for that last month, and I think that vote is going to happen either this week or next week. I think it's inconsequential either way. Congress says, go ahead, you have war powers for 3 years, you know, do what you're going to do, or if they don't say it, doesn't he just have the ability to take executive action anyway? So it's really largely a symbolic gesture, right?
Well, we apparently we've been fighting ISIS for years now anyway, so there's nothing's really going to change. It just kind of grants acceptance to all the past actions that we've been doing. That's been kind of hidden away. There's no... Nothing's really out there in the forefront of the public about what we're actually doing and how we're fighting them. But it's this just grants... It just legitimizes what we have been doing is what the take I would take on this new War Powers Act.
Right. And when putting a little bit of a timeline, because it's, I think it's 3 years is what the, you know, what the time frame for it is. I'm looking at Wikipedia. Are you talking about, Danny, according to Wikipedia, and I remember this a little bit, on the 16th of February, Egypt began conducting airstrikes in Libya in retaliation against ISIL's beheading of 21 Egyptian Christians. By the end of the day, 64 ISIL militants in Libya had been killed by airstrikes, including 50 militants in Derna. I don't recall when these were Egyptian Christian beheadings by ISIL. I don't recall hearing too much about that. Were you aware that these were Egyptians, or are you just recalling that they're Christians, Danny?
I just recall that they're Christians. I wasn't sure if it's from they're Egyptians or not.
Yeah, they were Egyptians.
Okay.
Well, they were Coptic Christians.
Yeah, beheading of Copts. On February 12th, 2015, the Islamic State released a report in their online magazine, Dabiq, D-A-B-I-Q, showing photos of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians that kidnapped in the city of Sirte, and whom they threatened to kill to avenge the alleged kidnapping of Muslim women by the Egyptian Coptic Church. 3 days later, a video showed up purportedly showing the beheading of the captives on a beach. The Coptic Church of Egypt confirmed the deaths, while Al-Azhar condemned the incident. Sisi announced a 7-day period of national mourning and called for an urgent meeting with the country's top security body. So in this situation, I mean, if you're just to look, if you're to take ISIS, if you're to assume that they're right, and who knows who's right and who's wrong, this was, I mean, in what you would call this is essentially blowback from ISIS to, you know, the Coptic Christians. So the Christians were aggressive and ISIS retaliated in kind. But, you know, again, who knows, you know, in that situation, who's telling the truth or not, right?
Right. I'm still kind of confused about this because, you know, ISIS, they believe in Islam. So, you know, they talk about, you know, Islam is, you know, a religion of love. Well, what they're doing is, you know, it's not really symbolical of, you know, what love is. So it's just kind of weird.
Well, ISIS is more of a Sharia-based Islam, which is all or nothing Islam. When the majority of
radicals.
Is Islam religion doesn't regard it in that fact. So, but and another thing is, though, that most the Sunni and Shias, Kurds, I mean, ISIS have been attacking them all, really, apparently. Right. Yeah. And so it's they haven't been singling out Christians, per se, yeah. But it's just kind of everyone. And so everyone's kind of up in arms about them. And it just kind of just goes to show, well, who are they? How are they rising to a dominant force in the area when everyone is kind of against them in a way? I mean, they're just out there turning the area into just a massive battleground of, you know, no structure, no law, and it's complete disorder and complete destruction, all in the while all the while saying they're going to attack every country that they can list, pretty much trying to get every, and that's why I just think it's all just a made up crap, because they're just thumbing their nose at everyone, just trying to put fear into the minds of everyone throughout the world.
Yeah.
And all of our governments are buying into it, saying, "Oh, we got to do this, we got to do that." You know, these people are our national interests, our national security is at risk. Really?
Yeah, and it feels.
I don't believe it for a second.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I'm actually going to roll the Rand Paul clip I referenced. It was about 4.5 minutes in a little bit here, but you know, to me, you know, from looking at this and from observing what's been going on, it appears, you know, it's just a group of savvy radical Muslims who are taking advantage of a weak government situation and a chaotic power vacuum, and they also are taking advantage of the fact that they're, I mean, when they've sacked bases and towns, they've basically picked up a lot of their weaponry, their trucks, their weaponry from U.S. backed groups. So they sack groups and they take their weaponry, and the U.S., you know, specifically in Syria, they're financing Syrian opposition groups who are fighting amongst themselves, and ISIS is able to inject themselves in that situation and fight these groups and take on infrastructure that the United States has directly armed these people with, which to me is pretty ludicrous. I mean, it points to, you know, to the really the idea of non-interventionalism, to let these people sort it out and don't throw U.S. funds and backing into a situation that's really, you know, out of the government's control and the military's control, because they're not going to, I really doubt they're going to do anything good by throwing, you know, weapons and military expertise into that area.
Yeah, these countries we've been bombarding is we're just turning into desolate, you know, ghost towns to where what can exist? There's it's damn near impossible for a functional economy in these areas.
Well, there is no functional economy. It's just oil. That's basically how ISIS is funding itself, is through oil revenues, and that's pretty much it.
They're selling a lot of it to Turkey, aren't they?
Yeah,
Turkey.
Who's to say? I mean, how is that even possible? I mean, that's just what they're saying. To me, it's still a lot of fear porn.
You don't buy it? You don't buy the fear porn? You think they're getting funds in other ways?
How would they be? So they take over these oil fields, take over these, you know, businesses that are operating them and siphoning the resources, and we can't track that. To me, it's so sketchy that it just it's so just a blanket statement and washed over about, you know, well, what do you mean these they're selling oil to the open market, they're transporting it, we couldn't bomb that if we really wanted to, or we couldn't weaken if they're selling oil, they're deriving it from somewhere, and why don't they just pinpoint where they're actually producing this oil from, and we could go take it back from them in 2 seconds if we really wanted to.
Sure.
And the whole money system is tied pretty much electronically, and we could be traced back and followed however they wanted to.
Yeah.
So maybe the Chinese is involved, and we just don't want to mess with it.
No, it's a conflict of interest galore all over is the way I look at it. That I don't know. If you go back and listen to Wesley Clark, he talks about how we're going to war with the plan was to go to war with 7 countries. I think 4 or 5 of them have already been taken over. What's left is like Syria and Iran. And Iran's being, I'd say it's being done in more diplomatic measures right now. But Syria, for some reason, we're just up in arms about. I really don't understand why. And I think mainly just because they are friends with Russia, which I think is the crux of the matter, and the real crux of the matter behind the scenes. And for some reason, we have to go after Syria. So we sat there and funded anyone willing to step up against Syria and trying to overthrow Assad. And in the process, we're funding people that are involved with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And therefore, they're siphoning the weapons to go ransack supposedly other towns or other military bases, which these bases are kind of allowed to be taken over and taken over weakened towns. And then we, you know, it just strengthens them in the long run. So it's to me, it's just it's a cat and mouse game where we're setting up traps to feed these mice running around to fatten them up to say we got to bring in these cats now to take over the area or to control the area. And I don't know, maybe it's some crazy strategy also to bring Iraq into more stability throughout the entire Middle East, really unify the Sunnis and the Kurds and the Shiites, but unify them together against something's called ISIS. But there's just too many holes in the matter. Nothing really makes sense. And it's when you hear our politicians, other than people like Rand Paul, they sit there and talk about, oh, you know, well, ISIS is doing all this terrible stuff in Iraq, but then, you know, Syria, you know, we got to go in there and we got to fund the rebels. And they just gloss over the fact that, you know, who are these rebels? What are they doing? And the media is compliant and covering it up as well.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty accurate, and it's very difficult to tell just because of all the different entities involved in Syria, you know, who's who and what's doing what. You know, Syria's, I mean, they're close with Russia, China, even North Korea uses Syria as a conduit for weapons transactions, allegedly. Who knows if that's even the case or if that's more of what you like to call fear porn, Kirk. But that's what I've seen and read, is that the North Koreans use Syria as a conduit for weapons trading and that type of thing. But yeah, it's a murky situation. It's really difficult. I'm going to roll this clip by Rand Paul that kind of discusses, I think, what a lot of us would think, what a lot of us think would be the best way to handle it. At home.
Good morning from Washington. I'm Candy Crowley. Four more Iraqi towns have fallen to ISIS, an Islamist militia that is plowing its way through Iraq on the way to Baghdad. This, as the initial group of U.S. military advisors is expected to arrive soon in Iraq. Joining me now, Senator Rand Paul, Republican from Kentucky. A rare treat to find you in town, so thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Looking at the situation in Iraq as it is now, what would President Paul do?
I think we have to understand first how we got here, and then we have to decide as a country where we're going. I think there's chaos in the Middle East, and I think the chaos is because we've created a vacuum. Before the Iraq War, I think there was somewhat of a standoff between Sunni and Shiite, had been for maybe 1,000 years off and on. But now we have a chaotic situation, we have a vacuum. And I think one of the reasons why ISIS has been emboldened is because we've been arming their allies. We have been allied with ISIS in Syria. They have had a safe haven because we have been arming the rebels to keep Assad away from them. And now they go back and forth. So I think our intervention in Syria has led precisely to what's going on.
It may have, Senator, but when one's sitting in the Oval Office, you have to think, what do we do now? So, would a President Paul at this moment
Bomb who's this lady? I can't
US
stand her.
Advisors and say, go and see what we can do to help the Iraqi army. Would a President Paul say, I
Andy
might do
Crawley.
Airstrikes?
I think the first thing you'd have to do is follow the Constitution. The Constitution says that Congress decides. The President doesn't have the unilateral authority to begin war.
But and you think it's a good idea?
Well, here's what I would say. This is an incredibly important point. The Reagan doctrine for how we go to war is that you should have a consensus of the people.
The Constitution
needs to be a full-throated debate, a full-throated debate in Congress, and Congress has to decide. Militarily, we could go back in. You know, the surge worked. Obviously, we have the military might and power, but the country as a whole has to decide – Do we want to send 100,000 troops in? Or are we willing to have 4,500 young Americans die to save a city like Mosul that the Shiites won't even save, that they've fled?
What does Rand Paul think at this point?
No ground troops. I think that we need
right.
to see.
And I think most everybody agrees. How about airstrikes?
I think we need to see what the Shiites want to defend themselves. If the Shiites are not willing to fight for their country, it may be that their country is not going to exist.
No, because by the time you hold a plebiscite and find out
how
to
pause
feel
it?
About
Iran, yeah, just
by the time you get Congress.
Sure.
That's a point that I like to bring up is that what are these countries in the first place? You look at Iraq and it's just a box around is it the Tigris and Euphrates River? Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, and when you have all these fractions, why do we have the country Iraq in the first place with all these fractions? That to me, it makes far more sense to separate it up and allow these new border lines to be drawn.
Yeah, we have like one of our first podcasts. We talked about how the Middle East, the countries in the Middle East are largely arbitrary in their creation. So the Middle East is tribal, and a lot of the lines are artificially created after World War I and World War II.
They were divvied up under in the colonial expansionism.
So I mean, they're not. I mean, you have these countries, and you call them, Syria or Jordan or Lebanon or Iran or Turkey. But really, they're largely tribal. I mean, and more to the point, they're tribally religious. So they're organized in, in kind of in sections. Just the way that they're divvied up breeds, confusion or chaos or conflict, right?
Yeah, and who's to say that that's not our foreign interests or our U.S. interests or British interests in the confining these border maps in such a way, which when they talk about, they can hit our homeland or our interests, that's really what the hidden interests are, is to keeping these areas as such to where we end up having to fight wars and have this constant strife in the area because of our interests deem it to be necessary. And then we're led to believe that it's a danger to our home, our country in itself. To me, it's all more the corporations' interest and monetary and our energy interests through oil.
So basically, it's just modern day colonialism, is what you're saying.
Yes.
You can put whatever other term, but everything is really being dictated by interests outside of the region,
which breeds discontent, breeds into these people that are willing to come and fight whoever and damn whoever's with us, which breeds the discontent of other fractions of Shiites or Sunnis, whoever, if you feel that these are the ones that are being backed by these foreign interests that are allowed to rule the area, and people are willing to stand up and fight and use their tribes or family lineage to do so, the power that they've acquired throughout that time.
Yep, I'll continue. I like how in this clip, Candy Crowley just basically gets back to, what are you going to do? You're going to bomb them, right? He's like, no, I'm not going to do this. So when are you going to bomb them? I'll continue.
To do anything is 2 weeks later, and the ISIS is sitting in Baghdad.
Right.
So you're going to have to move pretty quickly.
The ISIS.
There are times when
the ISIS, they're going to be sitting there.
Yeah, if you don't do anything, they're moving on Baghdad. They're taking over the whole area.
Yeah, there's only one solution. You're not giving me the right answer, Randy boy.
When a president would move quickly to dispel an imminent threat to our country. But where I disagree with the president is his theory in Libya was that there was an imminent threat to Benghazi. That's not what an imminent threat is. It's an imminent threat to our country. And so what I would say is that the Shiites who are ripping their uniforms off and running need to stand up and fight. And could we assist them in some way? I'm not ruling that out. But I would first wait to see, are the Shiites going to fight for their country or not?
Let me play you something that one of your Republican colleagues said, Senator Marco Rubio. He was talking about why this is important, and he does believe that national security is at stake.
And that we should bomb them.
The reason why we care is because we cannot allow a safe haven to develop there that can be used to carry out attacks that can kill Americans, including here in our homeland.
How?
So do you believe that the ISIS is a national security threat to the United States?
Well, do you know where the safe haven is? The safe haven's in Syria. So those who have been, let me finish. Because the thing is that they would not be empowered in Iraq if we were not providing safe haven in Syria by arming their allies.
So should we go to Syria? I mean, the thing is, we kind of are where we are.
Yeah. Bomb Syria.
We are where we are because we armed the Syrian rebels. We have been fighting alongside Al-Qaeda, fighting alongside ISIS. ISIS is now emboldened and in two countries. But here's the anomaly. We're with ISIS in Syria. We're on the same side of the war. So those who want to get involved to stop ISIS in Iraq are allied with ISIS in Syria. That is the real contradiction to this whole policy.
Right. And many of your Republican colleagues would argue that what we should have done in Syria was get rid of Assad, and that would have stopped ISIS in his tracks. But
right, but no, we went into
the
Libya
ISIS
and got rid of that
stopped.
Terrible Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Now it's a jihadist wonderland over there. There's jihadists everywhere. If we were to get rid of Assad, it would be a jihadist wonderland in Syria. It's now a jihadist wonderland in Iraq,
right,
precisely because we got over-involved, not because we had too little involvement, but too much involvement.
And here we are. Can a terrorist haven in Iraq, does a terrorist haven in Iraq, which it may be soon, threaten the national security of the U.S.?
It could at some point. I would say right now, if you are a member of ISIS, you're looking at the Shiites right in front of you in the battles you're fighting. I don't believe that ISIS is right now in the middle of a battle saying, I think we're going to send intercontinental ballistic missiles to America. So could they be a threat? Yes. But what I would say...
I don't believe you, Iran.
Yeah.
Well, we should have not armed them. If we wouldn't have armed them in Syria, maybe they wouldn't
forced
have
forced into that.
So the past is 6 months ago. The past is still the current as well. It is the present. We are still arming the radical Islamic rebels in Syria. So the homeland, they're going back and forth across the border. They go back into Syria, and that is a homeland that we are helping to defend.
How do you
for
stop
them.
That?
Well, let's not be involved in the Syrian civil war, and let's not be involved in the Iraq civil war.
I think that's out altogether.
Well, no. What I would say is that Maliki is an ally. Although, here's the thing: they think they're going to create stability by pushing Maliki out in the middle of a war. So we push him out, and then we have another power vacuum, and nobody leading the country at all. What I would say is, and my prediction is, that Maliki will stand up, and the Shiites will stand up, that ISIS will not be able to take Baghdad, and there will be a civil war over there, but there'll be a civil war with feckless people on one side that aren't necessarily great allies of ours, who are allies of Iran, and on the other side, allies of Al-Qaeda. You have to ask yourself, are you willing to send your son? Am I willing to send my son to retake back a city, Mosul, that they weren't willing to defend themselves? I'm not willing to send my son into that mess.
Let me move you to a different subject.
Well put, I think, for the most part. So I think that really, that's in a nutshell, that's what's been happening over the last, and it's even, you can tie it back to the Wesley Clark doctrine that you referenced, Kirk, is everywhere the U.S. goes, they create power vacuums, and the exact people they don't want in power end up to be in power. I mean, to me, it doesn't seem like, a recipe for a lot of stability or success, right? And to me, if you illustrate that, that's a pretty strong argument for not intervening in the first place and letting these countries just do what they're going to do and try and trade with them rather than dictating, how their politics work, you know, what their borders are, et cetera. Let them work it out and don't expend billions and billions of dollars on monkeying around in situations that in the end only result in spending money and incurring debt. That's really the only net result of any of this stuff. That's all it's been, and in my mind, that's all it's going to be. And it's just going to contribute to blowback and quote unquote terrorist activity, which would be far less severe if there was no involvement there in the first place.
Yeah, it's I just, but when you say you know, intervening, what, you know, how far back do you go? I mean, not going back and intervening through war, or going back and intervening and propping up the dictators that run these areas?
Well, a lot of these dictators came to power, you know, because of the United States political meddling in the first place.
Exactly. And so, and from that action led to the war in the long run, because all of a sudden we prop up these dictators and they finally get a good control of their country.
And then we come,
and then they and become, well, you know, I'm going to do what I want, America or United States. I'm not going to always bow down to what your wishes and demands are. And so, therefore, they start pissing off our politicians and on the powers that be in our country. And then all of a sudden, we got to go in and go to war with these countries. And to me, there's stuff going on around the world at all times. And whenever there's an interest in something happening, they can find
a reason,
an article, a reason, or they can just flat out make it up.
Which happens, right?
Yeah, and I think all three happen, and they just contrive the mess, and they drum the war machine and rile up the public, and to make it think that it's a reasonable action to forego. And it drives me crazy.
Danny, do you have any thoughts on, have you ever kind of done any research or have any thoughts on how ISIS was even formed? Or kind of, you know where they came from, why they're there or anything? Because what I've seen, it seems like they're just kind of a re-coalescing of, you know, radical Islam forces, Al-Qaeda forces, et cetera, getting back together. A lot of, you know, and they came to be for through different means and ways, I think. Have you looked at anything like that?
No. Tracing back to its roots, no, I have no idea how they came about. All I know is that, you know, after, you know, this power vacuum, you know, was created, you know, it was just an opportunity for them to rise, and, you know, they just took it. Somehow they get all these weapons and you know, tanks and things like that, through trading, through stealing, whatever, I don't know. And, you know, that's what made them so powerful today. So that's, to my extent, that's my knowledge on, you know, how they get powerful right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's interesting. So, yeah, we should all thank John McCain for all this.
Why is that?
Isn't he the one who kind of, like, you know, started, like, well, he's the one who always likes these wars and all that. So I'm sure he's the one who kind of drafted all these things that happened today.
Yeah, he is pretty hawkish, and he's even talking about, I mean, yeah, he's talking about the Syrian angle, and there's a bit of irony, and I think I've mentioned this before, but how Assad is one of the most tolerant leaders in the Middle East as far as religious tolerance and that type of thing. Everything was going pretty well for that country until, I mean, and maybe it falls in line with the Wesley Clark doctrine or not. It seems like, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, you started hearing that Syria is really, you know, they have a reprehensible government and that he needs to be replaced. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. And because Syria was free, one of the more free countries in the area,
yeah,
it was easily exploited by, I would say, our interest to go and set up rebel areas and strongholds outside of Iraq, you know, that is close to Iraq, that could cause problems for who knows what secret plans they have in the works. And it's, you know, there's no explanation for why we had to go into Syria in the first, or why, you know, exactly what you said about pounding the war drum for Syria's destruction. And they were trying to set up Assad as saying he was chemically bombing his own people, which was blatantly a lie.
Yeah, that was actually...
And still hashed out as the truth by our media and politicians.
Yeah, it's been widely understood to be something done by Syrian opposition groups rather than the Syrian government.
Yeah, and yeah, it, most likely a mistake even on their own, the rebel opposition's parts. But it's... It boggles my mind. But one direction that I think... that I have not heard anywhere is this whole, I think a reason that ISIS is in the media today is, and they're contriving this social media. They're so good with, they're so good tech people.
Yeah.
It's
been...
all to drum up this fear for more, for the government to gain control of the internet, which is this whole,
net neutrality.
If this net neutrality thing was going to fail, it was going to, and maybe it was just a little propaganda to have in the people's back of their minds that, you know, all right, we need to have government watching out on the internet because all this ISIS, people are flooding to ISIS because they're finding them online. And to me, that's the biggest load of crap ever.
The teenage girls on the Twitter coming over from
and to me, it's like, are you kidding me? People are buying that? Where do these kids get the money to buy a plane, and they're able to just fly, and well, they're believed to be on their way. And if it was really that problem, you don't think they would stop them? We don't think we have our agents, and they're close to airports in all these countries. Give me a break. we'd be using them as pawns if it was really happening. If we didn't care. And if it was really happening, we'd be watching where they went and following them and tracking them and using them as pawns because of their stupidity if this was actually a real thing. But to me, it was is totally contrived. I don't buy it for a second.
Well, ISIS, they're threatened to kill one of the co-founders of Twitter.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
On Twitter.
Better get net neutrality.
Yeah, I mean that's what you hear. They're YouTube savvy, they're tech savvy, they're recruiting, and it's kind of interesting. And I don't know if you guys have seen this or not. I haven't seen like an interview or read an interview from one of these people who've actually decided to do it. You'd think you'd maybe see something if they're so savvy, you know, as a recruitment tool, you know, why they're doing it. But have you guys run across anything like that? I've just, you know, I've seen they make scary remarks on Twitter. They put up their videos on YouTube. And that's it. You don't really hear any profiles of any of the members of the organization, any, you know, articles about them or why they joined. Or have you guys seen anything like that?
Nope.
Yeah. Which you think you would maybe see, right? Even out of the tens of thousands of people who decided to join.
Maybe these people are like us. They're like, you know what, I'm sick of the U.S. Screw you guys. I'm joining ISIS.
Don't do it, Danny. Yeah.
If people are like joining that. ISIS, it's because military pay. When these economies are totally destructed in these countries right now. They got no hope, no jobs, and they hear us, you know, oh, come fight for us, we'll pay you. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
It's.
I'm going to read a little bit of the of a wiki entry on the formation of ISIS. It's just take me a minute or two. Kind of how it formed. Following the 2003 invasion of Iraq, the Jordanian leader Mazoub al-Zarqawi and his militant group Jamaat al-Tawad wal-Jihad, founded in 1999, achieved notoriety in the early stages of the Iraqi insurgency for suicide attacks on Shia Islamic mosques, civilians, Iraqi government institutions, and Italian soldiers partaking in the U.S.-led multinational force. Al-Zarqawi's group officially pledged allegiance to Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network in October 2004, changing its name to Tanzim Kudat al-Jihad fi Bilad al-Rafidan, organization of jihadists based in Mesopotamia, also known as al-Qaeda in Iraq. Attacks by the group on civilians, Iraqi government and security forces, foreign diplomats and soldiers, and American convoys continued with roughly the same intensity. In a letter to al-Zarqawi in July 2005, al-Qaeda's deputy leader al-Zarqawi outlined a four-stage plan to expand the Iraq war, which included expelling U.S. forces from Iraq, establishing an Islamic authority as a caliphate, spreading the conflict to Iraq's secular neighbors, and clashing with Israel, which the letter says was established only to challenge any new Islamic entity. So just from that brief overview, you could summarize a lot of what the genesis of ISIS is and was as pretty much blowback against, you know, interventionalism within Iraq in the first place.
I would definitely agree with that.
So we got to fix the problem by getting into two more wars to fight ISIS, right? Eventually we'll win. We just keep fighting wars. We just keep on spending money, you know.
And creating enemies.
Yeah, it's kind of like inflation, you know. We keep on printing money and eventually, you know, everything will be all right, right?
Yeah.
Eventually everything will balance out and, you know, we'll have peace and harmony and, you know.
Through war and
inflation. Yeah, like that.
sounds like a recipe for success. So what do you guys think will happen? So, I mean, it was a year and a half. Was it almost? Yeah, a year and a half ago where Obama went to Congress and asked for ability to strike Syria and was denied those powers. And now is looking for congressional approval to strike ISIS essentially in Syria. Does this just mean expansion of the U.S. involvement in that area? And, you know, eventually, you know, you can probably use Iraq or Afghanistan as blueprints. A bunch of money spent, you pull out, and you have a civil war again, and you're pretty much back to where you would have been if you weren't involved in the first place.
Sorry, Eric, I got distracted. Were you talking to me?
Or both of you, either one.
What you want to just restate that?
Sure. I mean, what I just said is, you know, there was a push for Obama to get ability to do airstrikes within Syria about a year and a half ago. He didn't get that. He's going to go for, you know, wartime powers against ISIS. And you may or may not get that, and, you know, basically go through what has been gone through already in Afghanistan and Iraq and probably getting the same results. Do you guys see it happening differently, or, you know, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think it would have created a civil war in Syria. Mm-hmm. And it boggles my, I still never understood why we needed to go after Syria and what that would accomplish or anything. And yeah, it's pretty much just to overthrow Assad and put a new dictator in place and try and gain control that way, which is only going to breed resentment to the new leader, which creates more strife and future rebelization of the area.
I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I don't know. With Obama, he's probably reluctant, you know, to do any more of these attacks to Syria or anything like that. But, you know, maybe with the new president coming in, you know, especially if we have like a strong Republican coming in the next election cycle, especially with Jeb Bush, you know, I can see that, you know, more wars are coming about, and, you know, having this cycle kind of continue again. So I don't know if that kind of answered your question, but you know, with, you know, I don't know. You know, Hillary doesn't seem like a strong candidate, you know, according to the media, but you know, if we have like another, you know, this well-established Republican like a Jeb Bush, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a preconception that Democrats aren't for war. I think that's a farce. I think that there's been so many more wars under Democrats than Republicans, in my opinion. And the Republicans that have caused the wars, the Bushes, are more neocons, which are, to me, more liberal, the mainly liberal wing of the Republican Party in the first place anyways. And I think Democrats are all about foreign intervention and getting involved in the world policy and dictating to the world, because we are the world superpower and people need to bow down to us. And that's why I think it's a joke that Obama bows to people just to try and keep that perception going. But it's I don't see Obama backing down from any of the wars that has happened. It's been proclaimed that, you know, it has, but I don't see it as such. It's just more covert and more under the table dealings that have been going on that causes more blowback and more strife that America has no idea, you know, what the root cause in the first place. In, I mean, go back to Clinton. Congress denied going to war with Bosnia. He still bombed them. And is it Kosovo?
That's
Bosnia. Yeah, that's both Bosnia and Bosnia. Yeah.
What do you? I mean, with Bibi speaking, was it yesterday? Netanyahu. Do you think Israel plays a little role in? I mean, didn't they bomb a nuclear facility in Syria, like 4 or 5 years ago? I think the Israeli Air Force took out what was alleged to be a nuclear facility over there. And, you know, to a certain extent, there's vested interest there as well, right?
I don't recall that bombing, but
it was a while ago.
I don't know. I just, what do you think about just the general perception of the public? And, you know, especially since the movie American Sniper, I never saw it, but, you know, the talk, and I just hear the general banter from a lot of military people just saying that the, you know, Iraqis or a lot of people that live in the Middle East are just barbarians or savages. They just, you know, it's a total degrading term and just a general degrading outlook on these people.
And yeah, they won an Oscar.
And it's a completely different culture. And I just don't understand it. And then why, you know, our general involvement in the first place about it, but it blows my mind. It bugs me. It's a lot more propaganda, and it just feeds the superiority mindset and the justification, the moral justification in in the actions that we do over there. And that, to me, that's some of the most bothersome stuff when people talk about, well, you know, 9/11 happened. We had to do something. Okay, really? So all these countries that were sitting there were droning people, were leveling their cities, and we just expect these people to roll over and just accept it and just get on with their lives, deal with it? To me, it's the whole new mantra of terrorism in the world is so disturbing to me. And it's happening at home now through the acts of the Patriot Act. People getting charged with, you know, American citizens being charged with terrorism now for all sorts of various crimes that were never terrorism related in the first place, but now fall under the guidelines of terrorism. And it's a disturbing trend in this perception of, from all the fear porn of, you know, it's like we can't allow anything bad to happen to us. It's like, you know, it's the government needs to be there. It's needs to be set up. If one little thing happens, or even Rand Paul was buying into it, where it's like, oh, you know, are American people in danger, or an attack on the so-called homeland?
Oh, he was joking. He said that he said that in time.
He said, you know, it was a skirt of the answer, sure. But really, obviously doesn't believe so. But you know, it's the politicians speak. Well, you know, maybe in time they can, yeah. And it's that because of that's the perception of America. He has to portray himself that way, mm-hmm. And I don't think he believes it for a second. But it's that's the general perception, so he has to say, oh, yeah, well, in time, you know, they could. But what is terrorism? To me, there's a mental terrorism, and what our media is doing through the fear porn and everything is mental terrorism, more of a terroristic threat and action than any of these so-called ISIS, ISIL people could ever inflict on people throughout the world.
It's whatever the U.S. government defines terrorism. That's what it is.
Yeah, but it's that when you go into the, you know, people are, you know, through cyber, they're being propagandized, they're buying into this radical movement that something needs to be done.
Self-radicalized.
Yeah, self-radicalization. Yeah. It's like, so we're just going to throw freedom out the window?
We're all self-radicalized
now. If people want to do such a thing, let them do it, as long as they're not harming anyone. Don't go up and sit there. Don't utilize the FBI to set these people up. Give them money and so-called weapons to go and do, you know. These people are it makes no sense. And people are just constantly like, all right, well, we have to do something. We have to do something. This there's so much bad things in the world, you know. We have to go out there and put our boot on people's throats throughout the world, you know, make sure that this stuff doesn't happen. As long as it's not on my doorstep, I don't care what happens down the street.
That's kind of the beauty of the, you know, it's still, you can, you know, call it the growing libertarian moment, where there are more and more people are like, this is complete BS. We see through it. You can, you know, say what you want, but there's, you know, there are better ways, you know, peaceful, non-interventionist, non-aggression, you know, principles that you can enact. You don't have to use, you know, war as a weapon, you know, as a weapon to induce fear or to induce trade or, you know, and I think that's, it's kind of a good thing that, you know, I see in more and more people, you know, coming to that realization. It's probably, you know, it's not as large as it should be, but I think there's a good chunk of people are saying this is kind of silly. It's kind of ridiculous what's being done.
Yeah. And it goes back to a clip that we listened to from a younger Ron Paul a few weeks ago, where, you know, it's like, well, we were in war with Vietnam. Nothing became of it. No good became of it. But then now we trade with it. Now they're, you know, things are fairly decent, you know, relations. Good relations with Vietnam now. And when I was over in Egypt a decade ago, this was after 9/11, when people thought I was crazy to even go to the Middle East at that time. And over there, people are just like people everywhere else. All they want is to succeed in life, enjoy themselves, and have an economy to work and prosper.
Not be screwed with by outside.
Yeah,
forces.
And not be messed with, not be meddled with, especially by frickin' foreign countries. we got supposedly attacked on 9/11 by these so-called radical groups, and we're all up in arms about it. What about a country doing that to us? You know, it, give me a break. So all these, we're over there meddling in Libya, Iraq. We're constantly meddling with Iran. Egypt. Now we're meddling with Syria.
Israel, Egypt.
Yeah. The list does
Iran.
Not end. And we expect things to just iron themselves out without creating wrinkles. And we're pretending that we're ironing out a sheet while we're sitting there ironing out a freaking clump up there, a clumped up ball of sheet that just creates huge divisions and wrinkles throughout it that is impossible to wrinkle out in the future. And it just blows my mind. And so, yeah, when I was in Egypt, everyone was kind, copacetic. They just want your money. They want to say hello. They want to talk. They just want to enjoy life. And to think that it's different in the vicinity of the world is only because of fear manipulation through the media that is propagated to us as a country and Western society.
I think that's a good point, Kirk. Should we listen to another clip? We have about 5 minutes until we're up on an hour. And we talked about the Ron Paul clip, potentially, which is it's about 8.5 minutes long. It's a pretty good interview. Kind of goes over a lot of the same stuff we've mentioned between Ben Swan and Ron Paul. We can play some of it, skip it, do the whole thing, whatever works. Yeah.
Well, we could also just wrap up and maybe do that SNL clip, too.
Either way.
It's up to you. I'm fine listening to that clips either way, so I don't mind going a little longer.
Yeah, we can go an extra 10 minutes or whatever. We generally run between an hour and 5, an hour and 20 minutes anyway. So I'll roll this, and we can start and stop, and we'll wrap up with the controversial SNL clip. All right, here we go. Here's the Voice of Liberty clip between Ron Paul and Ben Swan, which aired last September 15th.
You know, it looks like this still has to get sorted out because, you know, I talk up alternative media, the internet, and the things that you and I have been doing as being a great alternative. We're making great progress, so we have an audience out there. And yet, if you look at the news in the last month, you know, a year ago, our efforts to tone down the war and not expand the war was doing quite well. But here, just recently, with some of the killings and the events and the description of ISIS, all of a sudden there's a tremendous shift, which means that the conventional media seems to have worked its will just as they did prior to the time of going into Iraq. Remember, it took a year
porn,
or so to get the
right?
people behind it. And this
is that what you're talking about?
Operated rather quickly. But then we still have the alternative media over there. There's still a group of people out there that want to know the truth.
That would
this
be
is
us
a tough
and other
battle.
People.
We have been making progress, but how tough is it? Any idea about who's having the greatest influence and how this thing
I'd say
may
fear
pan
porn.
Out?
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. First of all, you're absolutely right in what you're describing. I mean, if you go back 1 year ago to this push for the U.S. to go into Syria and to overthrow Assad, as we overthrew Gaddafi in Libya, as we overthrew Hussein in Iraq, when we see this happening, a year ago, the American public overwhelmingly rejected that idea. And that was an enormous victory for the alternative media and for new media because the old media continued to respond the same way they always have. Now, to your point about ISIS, what's different here is that with ISIS, there is this fear, the propaganda of fear, that was much more and is much more successful than what we saw in Syria. Because at the end of the day, regardless of where Americans...
Which makes Danny happy,
because
he likes fear.
Virtually no one was afraid of Assad over here. But the fear of ISIS and the images of ISIS cutting off journalists' heads and the images of ISIS, you know, slaughtering Christians in Iraq and Syria is enough that people have these archetypes, I think, built into their minds, and they automatically fall back and default to those archetypes and say, well, wait a minute. okay, we shouldn't be involved everywhere in the world, but this time and on this occasion, now we've got to go back and we've got to do something again. And because you have no difference, you know, that left-right paradigm in the media, on the left or on the right, it doesn't matter where media pretends to fall, they're all pushing for the same thing. Intervention, go into Iraq, the United States has a responsibility.
And it seems like it's difficult under these circumstances where there is so much emotion for reason to prevail. Because when you sit down and think about it, you know, there's a lot of governments over there that we don't like Assad. But now it looks like we're shifting and we're going to be on the side of Assad, but we can't admit it. And the same way with Iran. But it seems like logic just doesn't want to break through at times. But I don't see any alternative for us, you and the many others who are trying to make an effort to get the truth out,
and us.
Is to try to persuade people. And it's sad to me to think that after all these decades that people wouldn't say, and why aren't they thinking like they did last summer? And I think you've explained it pretty well. The emotions are just driven by this, and facts don't mean a whole lot. Ben, what specifically are you working on now to try to expose? Is there one issue that you're doing more work on than others? Any of the commissions and reports that have been out there that you're trying to let the people know about?
Well, one thing we're really working on right now, as I mentioned in the beginning, we have two reports we're pushing. One actually is complete, and so we'll be releasing a video next week specifically about cannabis and CBD oil and explaining to people not just what it is, but here's the real threat that it faces in our government system. And I think people are going to be very surprised to see while government is saying one thing, their actions on the other side of that issue are polar opposite. And so we hope to expose that and really continue to develop that. But in addition to that, we really are working right now to create a piece that will demonstrate to people the truth about where ISIS came from. You were talking about the fear issue, and that's what
we've
been talking
about
today.
This was actually just released last week.
It is a significant issue. And I think if we do not show people that this is where ISIS comes from, it is not inaction that created ISIS. And that's what media and politicians are telling us over and over and over, is that if we made any mistake, it was inaction, and that's not true. It was direct action by this government in funding so-called rebels in Syria, in funding these groups along the Iraq-Syria border in order to overthrow Assad, that created this in the first place. And beyond just journalism, I think this is one of the most important stories that we can share with folks, because as you know, history just continues to repeat itself. And unless we show people, step back from the emotion and think about sensibly what's happened here, we're doomed to keep making these same mistakes.
We're going to finish up shortly here, but I want to thank you very much for being with us today, and I love the fact that you're participating in Voices of Liberty, and that just gets more information out to more people, so we appreciate that very much. But I wanted to ask a little bit different question. It's not so much philosophic, but it's more social. You've been in the media, and I know you've met a lot of people.
And I think that's good for that clip. But that's really what we've been talking about anyway, right? Just basically reiterating what we've gone over. I mean, there's the propaganda, the large media line, and then there's the truth. And there's, you know, what you hear is somewhere in between, right?
And I just like to have people ask themselves, why couldn't we learn what really happened in Benghazi in the first place? And I think that was a direct correlation to funding the rebels in Syria through Benghazi and Libya, which our government could not release what was happening because of the fallback of the creation of ISIS and ISIL in the long run. That was a cause of that, which goes to say, was it not, maybe it could have been a plan all along to create something like ISIL or ISIS.
So you think the United States could have some involvement, direct involvement in something like that occurring? It's a possibility.
Nothing would shock me anymore.
Sure.
More wars.
More wars. It's profitable business.
More money.
It's just that general destabilization that creates the the need for more action.
All right, and it creates wonderful father-daughter moments like this that we'll play. And have a little wrap-up after that. Here we go. This is a sketch that ruffled some feathers last weekend. It was pretty funny on SNL. You have to see the whole thing. It's on YouTube. It's called Father-Daughter Ad, if curious.
Well, this is it. You need any help with your bag?
No, it's all right. I got it.
How about some walking around money?
Dad, it's okay.
Okay, just make sure to...
Call you when I get there? I know.
Yeah. You know, you could stay home, do another year of high school if you...
Very funny, Dad.
Well, I'll see you at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'll see you. Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You got it, kiddo. Looks like your ride's here. You be careful, okay?
Dad, it's just ISIS.
Take care of her.
ISIS. We'll take it from here, Dad.
I love how the gunshots are firing and people are just still walking normal.
Just another day in the city.
Yeah. It's just ISIS.
Well, to me, it's a subtle propaganda. It's subtle mind melding propaganda of all these little girls are really might end up with ISIS. As a parody, but it leaves it in that mindset in your back of your mind. But with that, hopefully you guys had fun with us tonight. I hope all made you think and question reality that's always brought upon us. And with that, we thank you for being here. This has been Liberty Southwest, podcast number 47. It's been Danny Ning, Eric Taylor, and myself, Kirk Pettis. Till next time.
Take care. Adios, mofo.